another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Insurgent Radio Network.
White Area and Resistance Radio calling. White Area and Resistance Radio calling. This is White Area and Resistance Radio, and this is Terrible Tommy in the Bunker today on a, not so bad as yesterday. Anyway, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Send your cash, check, or money orders for your donations. And if you get more than, say, a half a month behind time, I have to drop you off for a while. But anyhow, this is the June 16th, 2016. How about a lot of sixes there? There's a 666 in there, boy, all you Christians out there. The devil come and get you, boy. Yeah, yesterday we had an attack of the humidifier around here. Man, I'm telling you, we got hit hard, and I chose that day to make a very bad mistake. Normally I go just to an interview just to please myself. Yesterday I said, well, I'm going to spruce up. I haven't spruced up in a long time, so I got my big old black suit out, my business suit, and my big old tie, and wrapped it around my neck and my fancy shoes, and went down to the interview, and I'm telling you, I nearly passed out from the heat. From now on, I'm going to go back to wearing my bib overhauls like usual when I do an interview. It makes them happy anyhow. So we did this fairly long interview. I had a problem with my camera, so I should have. And then I forgot to turn on my audio mic for my audio recorder. I'm telling you, if I don't have some kind of a guidance counselor around me, I'm in big trouble. So anyhow, the video didn't turn out right. Well, anyhow, they're going to send me one. This is an Italian-German. How about that? He had his speech pattern was, I could barely understand him. I know what they'll have to do. They'll take all my answers and they'll edit them into, and they'll have some slick moderator handle that, and they'll edit it all in the studio. So I gave him what for, and a good time was had by all, but I'm sure glad. Today, the humidity's way down, the wind's up, and it's cool. So, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, boys. I'm trying to get this new phone line into the bunker straightened out. They've given me three numbers, and all of them were defective. Can you believe? You know, wish I could go back to old Ma Bell back in the old days. We never had this problem with Ma Bell, you know. But they decided she was a dictatorship or corporation, big deal, and they split her up. And ever since then, telephone service has not been what it should be. So I called in this morning, and they gave me a whole new number. They've given me three numbers. It didn't work. Now they give me another number. And then I've got a little wiring problem here in the bunker. Jerry the Jew's been eating on the phone line, so it's going to take me a while to get that damn thing going. I begin to wonder whether it was worth it. Well, this is the time of the year back here in Indiana. We got a lot of festivals. We got two or three different towns around us that are having big deals this weekend. Yeah, they have all kinds of fun, but it's primarily it's just selling new Chinese shit, junk, and food. And these Hoosiers back here eat like pigs. You put it in front of them and they'll eat it. And I'm telling you, it's not these festivals are not what they're cracked up to be. They're mainly buy food, eat food, maybe ride on some kind of a cockamamie ride or something, and away you go. So they're not that much fun anymore. I remember back when I was a kid, we used to have harness racing and things like that, and we used to have horse pulling contests. You know, those old big old horses that the knights used to ride, the Belgium drafts. The only place you can see them now is at the beer company place. I forget which beer company that is. It's crummy beer, I'll tell you that. But anyhow, yeah, they used to be all over the place back here. Farmers had them because they could pull anything, those things. Tractors weren't quite, you know, the popular thing at that time. And they'd bring those big old Belgian draft horses out to the fairground, and they'd pile a couple of thousand pounds of cement or iron on a sled, and these horses would compete. And it's amazing how the strength and the power of those horses. They would get down and crawl like a dog through the mud. I mean, you know, they'd really totally hunker down. And they keep adding on weight till one of them was the super winner. And boy, that was something to see. Then they converted to tractors. There was no fun after that, you know. So a tractor pulls some weight. So what? It's supposed to pull weight. To see a magnificent horse that that breed used to carry the knights in all their shining armor pulling massive amounts of weight, now that was something to watch. Well, I see we had another victim on the zoos, the corporate zoos. You know, they're always cutting corners to make more money and do it cheaper. So we lost another two-year-old boy. I think this one was white, too. My position's very simple, but not too popular, I guess. I'd eliminate all the zoos. Turn the animals back into the wild, keep them in the wild. Have safaris all over the world to go look at them, and you got a great big screen TV, and it's 3D and clear and everything, so you can see all these animals right up close, right on your TV in your living room. You don't need to even go to a zoo. Zoos are archaic, and zoos, as far as I'm concerned, should be eliminated. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment for our animal friends, and remember, we're higher animals, so we're supposed to be nice to our lower animals. Sometimes I don't know whether you'd say they're lower or not. Sometimes I think we're lower. I think a lot of the animals have more brains than we do. You know, my Siberian Husky, there's something really is funny about her. She will sit at my feet sometimes and stare into my eyes for 10, 15 minutes, straight on. I'll look up at the TV, and then I'll come back and look at her again. There she is, the same stare, straight on, like she's trying to hypnotize me. I don't know whether you've ever seen dogs do that, but it's weird. She don't blink, she don't move her head, she don't do anything, just straight out stare into my eyes. So tell me what that's all about. I wonder what the hell she's thinking I'm going to make a good mouthful of food someday if I croak. Or maybe not. Maybe she's reading my mind. You know, about a day after that big shootout down there at the homosexual bar in Florida, Obama made this speech, and Trump has really gotten into that boy's head, and he's rented a room because he really was upset. And he usually doesn't get that upset, but old Donald Trump got into his brain and worked on it. And that's funny as hell. Obama was stammering and stuttering, mad as hell, ain't going to take it no more. And if Hillary and Obama and all these people keep reacting to Trump like they've been reacting to Trump, he's going to drive them totally around the bend before this campaign's over. Whether he wins or not, he's going to drive them flat out crazy, man. Well, let's get back into a pessimist's guide to history and see how lucky you are that you're not living back then. 1876, the Battle of the Bighorn, Little Bighorn. Warriors from a number of Indian tribes, Mongol tribes, including the Sioux, the Cheyenne, the Hunkapapa, defied the U.S. government's orders to report to reservations in 1876. And instead chose to follow the lead of the medicine man Sitting Bull. Soon 3,000 Sioux warriors were camped in teepees sprawled along the Little Bighorn Valley. The job of subduing Sitting Bull's forces fell to Brigadier General Alfred Terry, who formed what was called the Yellowstone Expedition to seek out the Mongol encampment. While en route, Terry's forces, with General George Custer serving under him, linked up with additional troops under Colonel John Gibbon. Terry then split the forces into two columns, giving Custer command of the 7th Cavalry. Terry ordered Custer to march no more than 30 miles a day in a wide sweep toward the Indian camp, Mongol camp, in order to arrive at the Little Bighorn no sooner than June 26. Terry then rode with Gibbon's troops, who had to march more slowly because of the Gatling gun division among them. And it's obvious that the Gatling gun never made it to the battle, or there'd have been a lot of dead Mongols. On June 26, both units were to attack the Mongols simultaneously in a two-prong attack. Instead of following orders, here we go again. Whoa, that happens to a lot of people. Okay, where are we at? Instead of following orders, Custer pushed his men to ride as many as 78 miles in one day and arrived within striking distance of Sitting Bull on the afternoon of June 25th. He's trying to make a big name for himself. Though his soldiers and their horses needed rest and his Mongol scouts warned him the enemy's greater numbers had made victory impossible, Custer immediately violated orders and mobilized to attack. Oh boy. Dividing his 700-man cavalry, Custer took five companies of men and rode towards the most populated part of the Mongol camp. Apparently, Custer assumed that the Mongols would flee and planned to cut them off. To start the Mongols running, Custer sent Captain Marcus Reno and other seven companies to attack one end of the Mongol village. Reno's men attacked first and soon found themselves outnumbered and outgunned. The cavalrymen had only single-shot carbines, while many Mongols had repeat action Winchesters, because, you know, back then, just like today, there's traitors that will sell weapons to our enemies anytime they get a chance. They don't give a shit whether they're Mongols or what. Same way when they supplied the Mongols with whiskey. And there's a problem with the Mongols drinking whiskey. Just like the mestizo Mexicans. They cannot handle their booze. Okay, Reno was forced into a gradual retreat, and though he lost about 100 men, his column fared much better than Custer's did. Hearing Reno's men begin their attack, Custer then led his charge into the other end of the encampment. He, too, found himself outnumbered and outgunned. The Mongols, apparently about 1,500 to 2,000 strong, fought Custer ferociously, buoyed by their superior numbers and by a recent vision of Sitting Bull's that showed them vanquishing many white soldiers. Warriors plentiful as the leaves on the trees rushed at Custer's position and surrounded him. The bloodbath lasted between 30 and 55 minutes. Custer was apparently killed by Indian gunfire, and soldiers who tried to retreat were cut to pieces. Over 250 soldiers died in the massacre. Those six soldiers lived long enough to be marched to the Indian camp and killed there. Of Custer's whole column, only a horse called Comanche survived the massacre. Who said the best offense is a good defense? It sure wasn't for George Armstrong Custer. Well, that's when you don't pay attention to tactics in warfare. You lose, just like this book I was reading to you about Hitler and the many mistakes he made because he was so arrogant and thought he knew all about warfare, and he didn't. And he found out, and it cost millions of men to learn a hard lesson. That's not just of the enemy, so-called enemy's men, that's your men, you know. So George Custer was an asshole, just like many military men are today. I mean, you know, they read a lot of books, they think they know how to fight a war. And they learned that in Vietnam, that things aren't always the way you think they're going to be. And those little yellow people were a lot more capable and ferocious than you thought. Well, let's read one more here. About 1876, the Bengal cyclone wiped out 100,000. Mother Nature can beat man any time at disasters. She does a real wild job. Just before midnight on October 31st, a tremendous cyclone struck the coastal area around the mouth of the Meghna River in Bengal, India. Thousands of residents on the mainland were shaken from their sleep or immediately drowned by 20-foot waves crashing over their houses, while offshore islands were being wiped out entirely. Within 30 minutes, floodwaters rose as high as 40 feet in the coastal city of Bekaragunj. Terrified residents climbed into the roofs of their houses only to find the roofs themselves being torn away. Drifting helplessly in the raging floodwaters, many clung desperately to pieces of wreckage to keep from drowning. Others survived by climbing into the palm and coconut trees that dotted the area. While a horrific total of some 100,000 people died during the storm, the disaster was far from over. In the storm's aftermath, fully 100,000 more died of diseases that spread rapidly among the survivors, who had been left without pure water and food and without proper health and sanitation facilities. And that'll happen over and over again, and it'll happen, it may happen here in North America as time goes on. Mother Nature don't screw around. It's not nice to try to fool Mother Nature. Those Christians ought to be worshiping nature, Mother Nature, rather than the baby Jesus. Mother Nature can really kick ass, or Mother Nature can be very loving. Well, here's an interesting little article. The smallest action you do in the heart of their land, unquote, declared Islamic State spokesman Abdu Muhammad al-Adani earlier this year, is dearer to us than the largest action by us, and more effective and more damaging to them, unquote. Omar Mateen seems to heed this call when he apparently decided on his own to mow down 49 homosexuals at an LGBT nightclub in Orlando, Florida, an act he dedicated to the Islamic State. As Adani predicted, the attack received far more attention than the latest developments in Syria and Iraq, prompting recriminations as well as shows of support, and once again putting the Islamic State on the world's front pages. Attacks by such lone wolves, individuals who have no operational connection to a terrorist group or network, but act in its name or the name of a broader cause, are cheap and seemingly impossible to defend against. They are also lethal. In addition to Orlando, last year saw shootings in San Bernardino, California, and Chattanooga, Tennessee. The Boston Marathon bombing in 2013 was another example of form. It also bears mention that the lone wolf phenomenon isn't restricted to Islamic terrorists. The far right has seen its share of lone wolf attacks, at least a dozen in the past 10 years, including the 2015 shooting in Charleston, South Carolina church. Yet as a strategy, the lone wolf approach is one of failure. Wolves kill, but they don't win. Well, yeah, if guerrilla warfare people just went out and just, like they sometimes do, and blow up things, you know, that don't have any direct, really close direct effect, on what's going on? Well, of course not. Like the IRA, when the IRA decided to go from lone wolf actions against single important people, you know, what was that guy they knocked off? Lord something, on his yacht. And when they went from that kind of an operation to setting bombs in department stores and killing all kinds of people, they started losing. If the enemy could have wanted them to do anything, they would have wanted them to do that. Because that's when the public opinion really went against the IRA. Because lone wolves, like Mateen, are not usually trained, they often fail, and even if they succeed, let's see here, they are less lethal than professional terrorists. Well, a professional terrorist can be a lone wolf, of course. And of course, he's not usually trained. Well, that's the key wording, not trained and not even self-trained and not even clear on how they're going to hurt their perceived enemy, because so many of these people, look at Glenn Miller, the so-called the lion of the right wing in the Klan, gets drunk and goes out and shoots people that have nothing to do with anything. Well, if you go back into the turn of the century, the last century, the anarchists, in the late 1800s too, they became very effective because they went after top people. They didn't go after little people. And so a lone wolf, if he's going to be a violent person, has to learn and train not only how to do it, but who to do it. You know, these big shot politicians and corporate leaders, they don't care how many little people you kill. I mean, they'll say they do. Oh, yeah, my heart goes out to these people. I pray for these people. We all got to get behind these people. All of that's bullshit. It's bullshit. Remember when it was it the Red Brigades that took that Aldo Moro banker and held him for quite a while and stuffed him in a trunk and pumped him full of bullets and left him on the street? You imagine the fear that put into the hearts of big shots, politicians, bankers, corporate leaders? That's when they started really hardening all their defenses. I remember when the talk show guy in Denver, I forget his name right now, but anyhow, before that, you could walk into any radio station and walk right into the control room. But after he was wiped out, believe me, every control room had locks everywhere. I saw it happen right before my eyes. Locks everywhere. So there's no fear like the fear that can be put into the hearts of the ruling class. of course, most of these people that want to do something violent, they don't particularly do the research and know how to reach those kind of people. So they get frustrated and go out for just killing numbers of people and think that that's some kind of a operational win, which is it's not. But when let's go on with this article. The post 9/11 record of plots in the United States shows most of the would-be terrorists to be bumblers. Yeah, they're amateurs. Yeah. The contrast with the attackers in Paris in 2015, Madrid in 2004, London in 2005 is striking. In each of these attacks, Al-Qaeda or Islamic State-linked attackers worked together, bombed and shot their victims, leading to 130, 191, and 52 deaths, respectively. Yes, but still, outside of causing media to make a lot of money saying, oh my God, and having all kinds of crazy stories, what did that accomplish in the end, really? I mean, the body count, yeah, they had a body count, but what in the system, in the ruling class, changed? Did the corporates change their attitude? Did the politicians really change their attitude? No, they used it to go, after the little people and put laws in, you know, like Homeland Security, you know, spending billions of dollars making money. That's the first thing they do, and the other is to limit your freedom of movement and so forth. So that's the way that goes. Reminds me of a hunter that goes into the woods, and he's supposed to be out to get himself a deer, but he says, well, that cow is pretty good too, so I'll just shoot the cow. But the cow wasn't what the target was supposed to be. Now, if these people ever get really serious and start honing in their targets, they're going to be held to pay. They're going to put the fear of Almighty God in the politicians and the congressmen and the big corporation guys, because anybody can be gotten too. I mean, there's nobody beyond getting gotten too. I mean, they kill our presidents. I mean, you know, so if they can kill the presidents and people like that, well, forget any kind of real security and defense, because it's not there. Professionals will get you if they want you. Sustaining the attacks is another problem. In Orlando, in San Bernardino, the terrorists or guerrilla warfare people or whatever you want, I get so sick of the word terrorist. It becomes almost meaningless. Died in shootouts with the police. In Boston, the terrorists successfully shut down the city with a primitive bomb at the Marathon. Those pot bombs. But rather than conducting more attacks, leaving town, or otherwise preparing for the next round of mayhem, they went out to party with their friends. These so-called lone wolves like that, they're just playing games. This tactical amateurism diminished not only the death count of these attacks, but also their terror value. Often the targets lone wolves pick are less strategic and symbolic. Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. Reflecting their personal agendas more than those of the group. And that's exactly right. I've seen it even among our more respected right-wingers that they allowed their personal animosity to get in between what their overall goal was supposed to be, such as the killing in Denver. I'm not going to go into it but that was caused by a person that had a personal gripe with a talk show guy. And he allowed that to interfere with their overall goal, which shut them down a lot sooner than if they'd have stuck to their plan, evidently. And symbolic reflected their personal agendas more than that of those of the group. And that's what you can never do. The jury is still out as to why Mateen chose the Pulse nightclub for his murders. But the San Bernardino attack occurred during the office Christmas party at a community health center where one of the killers worked. San Bernardino is a city few in the world who have heard of, hardly an iconic choice like Paris, London, and Madrid. The Islamic State can still brag about killing its enemies, but the cachet of shooting patrons of an LGBT nightclub or office party is low. Yeah, and that's what I keep telling you. Undisciplined attackers can also embarrass a group or a cause. Well, that's for damn sure. That happens all the time on the right. The white supremacist movement, which there is none, there's only white racist movement, for example, had to contend with Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, which actually helped the ruling class in Washington. And Timothy McVeigh, of course, was not a good white racist. He had Filipino girlfriends, and that's pretty bad. So did his helper. The attack that killed 168 people not only struck a symbol of what McVeigh believed to be an oppressive federal government, it also killed 19 children and 3 pregnant women. Well, that's because the feds purposely put a kindergarten inside a federal building, which is always could be in a target. That wasn't an accident. What sane group of agents would put a kindergarten in a building that's a possible attack of so-called terrorists? No, that was, well, I can't say it wasn't out of stupidity, because I've seen so much stupidity in the federal government of the United States, it's hard to say which it is. It was tough to portray McVeigh's cause as a heroic after that. Well, it sure was. It sure was. If that had been a regular building or empty at night and when everybody went home and they'd have done it, that would be one thing. But the way it turned out, it was a bad situation. By their very nature, lone wolves are not integrated into the population as a whole. Well, what do you mean by that? Not integrated? Well, maybe they pretend not to be integrated. Or maybe they pretend to be integrated. The most successful guerrilla groups like Hamas and Hezbollah provide social services, compete in elections, and have large military wings that are embedded in the community. And that is more effective. That is more effective. Like when Pretty Boy Floyd, back in the day, came to Kansas City and handed out baskets of food to the people who were on welfare. He was very popular. In fact, he was more popular than the President of the United States. These ties often make groups cautious, but they also give them deep roots that sustain them when times get tough and enable them to shape the politics of their regions. Violence by itself has much less impact. Now, these things get into the community and the songs and everything else in the community of the exploits of people like Pretty Boy Floyd and John Dillinger and like that. A lot of guerrilla operators, and they become heroes. And what the system doesn't seem to understand, or maybe they do, is that the idea of this kind of operation is to keep going, just keep going and going and going, decade after decade after decade, father to son, father to daughter, and keeps on going. If anyone's getting involved in that kind of activity and thinks it's going to be like most Americans, a week operation or 2 weeks. You know, they do that every time a war starts. You know, World War One, World War Two, yeah, it's Civil War. Oh, this war will be over in a week and we'll be home. Whoopee. Well, that's, if it's a serious thing, it's not going to be that way. Such ties are especially important because lone wolf attacks, like guerrilla attacks, usually lead governments to redouble their efforts. It gives them an excuse to redouble their efforts. It gives them an excuse to spend lots of money and make a lot of contractors very, very rich. Paris led France to become more aggressive in its military operations against the Islamic State's core in Iraq and Syria. Before the Orlando attacks, the New York Times ran an article in which many argued that the FBI was too aggressive in targeting would-be terrorists, though its extensive use of sting operations and informants. Today, such criticisms ring hollow. Yeah, well, that's another reason that the system itself likes these kind of operations, and they can wring their hands all they want and claim they're praying for all the people that are dead, but they don't give a shit, believe me. You think there's not people that evil? Well, there are people that evil. There always have been. Because of these many problems, groups are more likely to embrace lone wolf attacks when they are weak. White supremacists, who exercised vast political influence in the 20s and other periods through the Ku Klux Klan and other groups, began to call for leaderless resistance. That was Louis Beam and I that came up with that. That idea came out of Cuba, revolutionary activity in Cuba. That came out in the 80s, during the old 20s Ku Klux Klan, but Louis Beam and I came out with that about the same time, leaderless resistance. As their support declined, the groups went that route. Well, it's just natural, and it's a good idea. The Islamic State called for lone wolf attacks in 2014, but then, when its strength in the Middle East was rising, it prioritized giving recruits go to its self-proclaimed caliphate if they could. Now it places more emphasis on lone wolves acting at home, but it does so as the caliphate has lost vast amounts of territory and watched as its funding dries up. The number of foreign recruits plummets. Lone wolf attacks help this group on the run claim that it is winning. That's because they don't understand to carry on the type of guerrilla warfare that they're interested in. It has to go on forever. I mean, you have to have fanatics and pass from father to son, father to daughter. And that's what I say. These people gained a lot of territory right on, you know, sort of like other countries have done in war. I mean, you know, when Germany invaded Russia, they gained massive millions of acres of land and overrun armies of the Russian people. But it wasn't but a year or so later, they're coming back the other way, running to save their lives. So you could take it, but you got to be able to hold it. And it's almost impossible unless you've got massive funding behind you. And ISIS is losing their oil money, and they, I think, broke into all the banks in the area and took all the money. And so they don't have much power behind them. The biggest reason groups embrace lone wolves is that they're hard to stop. Well, of course. Duh. They're less likely to be on the radar screen of law enforcement services because they lack foreign connections. Comprehensive, well, do they need foreign connections is a question. Comprehensive defenses are impossible. We can't defend every Christmas party, nightclub, or marathon, or politician driving down the street going home in his bulletproof car. Indeed, we should recognize that success abroad might, in the short term, lead to more attacks as the Islamic State seeks to prove its relevance. Wow. We must ensure that the FBI has the resources. Well, I would hope they had the brains. Yeah, I mean, they don't look too smart. I mean, they let the guys, 9/11 guys, get away. They had all that shit on the computers. What, up in Michigan someplace? And they failed to grab the machines, the computers with all the plans to 9/11 on, you know. So I don't have much confidence in these FBI in peace and war. We must ensure that the FBI has the resources, i.e. money. That's going to solve the problem. And authorities, it needs to find and disrupt those would-be lone wolf attackers who do land on the radar screens. Well, yeah, but they're recruiting blacks, and other so-called minorities. I mean, and a lot of people who are not really super intelligent. Even MI5 and MI6 are doing that in England, which will lead to the deterioration and weakening of these security outfits. And they won't say it, and nobody wants to talk about it, but you can't have stupid assholes that think they're smart running your intelligence and security outfits. And even worse, have a politically appointed leader of the FBI. Even more important, the support of local Muslim communities is vital. Well, you can't depend on that because they get bought off just like everybody else. They bought off the Christians, they bought off the Jews, and they buy off the local Muslim groups. as they are more likely to know. But when they run out of money, that's when it's going to get interesting. When this country runs out of ability for credit, not money, when the credit thing crashes, it really crashes here in Europe, then you're going to really see it. Okay, let's see, where was I? If these communities are alienated by discrimination or the poisonous political rhetoric against them, then they are less likely to reach out to police. In other words, race mix with them. Bring them into your society. Bring them into all your groups. Get them in there. Marry them. Screw them. if you don't do that, you're just going to make it rough. We can't solve the situation. Perhaps most important, we must recognize that some attacks will still get through. Well, of course, they always do. And thus, resilience is vital. Well, American people don't have much resilience. They sure as hell don't. They don't want to really get to solving any big problem, because they, you know, like the border. You know, I was screaming at them since the 70s about the border. They didn't want to be bothered, and they still don't want to be bothered. They'll mouth things about the border and being overrun by these brown-skinned rapist people, but that's as far as it goes, you know. Oh, we'll build a wall. We'll build a wall, man. It'll be the highest wall in the world. It'll make the China Wall look like a toy. Well, like I said, it's simple to solve the problem at the border. You just hire Mexican military people or others that are good at what they do, issue them rifles and plenty of ammunition, put them every 100 feet across the border, pay them good money, because it'd save you lots of money by doing it. Point them south, not north, and when the illegal aliens come through, they simply say, go back. I don't know how that's spelled out in Spanish, but go back. If they keep coming, go back, dummy. It reminds me of when I ran for Congress and I was doing a press conference and I advocated building a military storage area about a mile wide from the ocean over to way east. And I said, just keep all this military equipment in there. And I said, you think that those illegal aliens are going to try to go through that? The way they would be defended, these areas. And the press guy said, well, what would you do if they did? I said, we'd kill them. And that was all over the newspaper. Metzger advocates killing illegal aliens. I didn't say that. I said, these people were invading a military operation, top security. And they're told to go back. And they don't go back, so you shoot them. Of course they would. Or at least they should, if they had any brains, if we had a military. I mean, you know, so no, it's all fun and games, boys and girls, but believe me, down through history, lone wolves have pulled off some pretty big operations, but they knew exactly who their targets were going to be and didn't piss around with homosexuals or the average black guy in the ghetto or the chink in the Chinatown and stuff like that, you know. That's not it. Now, the Weather Underground, they were nibbling at it. They had quite a bit of it right, but they weren't that successful either. But they had some good plans on the board, that's for sure. So I'm going to give the Weather Underground credit. They certainly knew who the enemy was. The Black Panthers, that was a joke. That's a media creation. The press, again, creates all this stuff. They love it. So when the Black Panthers went into the state senate in California with unloaded shotguns, it made worldwide news, and it went on and on. But as far as being an effective group against the system, they were not any more than the Symbionese army was, which was another black radical group. They were far more serious than the Black Panthers, however. You remember many of their people fought to the death and were burned to death by the police in Los Angeles. Cops and federal people like to do that. If they can't get you to come out and surrender, the next thing is to start a fire on the roof or something and burn you out. It's a famous tactic. They say, well, we didn't intend to burn him to death. It's just the way it happened, like they did with Bob Matthews up on Whidbey Island. They murder by fire. It's interesting that back in the day when the Minutemen were going pretty strong, they never really, really got going, but they had a lot of operations, a lot of tactical training, that the Minutemen were running leaderless resistance small group attacks on police stations in Los Angeles, mock invasions, mock hits, that when the shit went down, that they would know how to use live ammo and go after their opposition in the system. So it's interesting that Robert Depew was logistically pretty smart and tactically pretty smart, and he had it all laid out. But it was based on the false premise that the Russians are coming. The Russians are going to get us. So, looking at the way things are, maybe it would have been better if the Russians had got us and they'd replaced all these blacks with Russian people. Anyhow, now once they get into the flurry of things, that's all you're going to hear is lone wolf this and lone wolf that, and how we're going to stop lone wolf and terrorism and all that kind of stuff. And it's 99% bullshit. So don't worry about it. There were lone wolves clear back in the caveman times. You know, one guy in one tribe in one cave say, this is bullshit. I'm going out and kill somebody and leave the rest of them in the cave. So the lone wolves have been around forever. Tickles me when bitches like this Hillary Clinton talk and bravado and all that shit. Quote, we will assemble a team across the government, private sector, and our communities to get on top of the lone wolf challenge, unquote. Ridiculing Donald Trump over his fixation with the phrase radical Islam. Well, of course, it was always radical from the very beginning because Muhammad was a killer son of a bitch. He wasn't no holy man sitting around in a cave praying. He was out having armies kill people all over the Middle East. Hillary Clinton has said her Republican rival's reckless ideas like banning Muslims from entering the United States would put the country in a great danger. Ms. Clinton alleged that Mr. Trump's remarks have become inflammatory in the aftermath of the Orlando terrorist attack by an Afghan-origin American youth, Omar Mateen. Well, if you got a problem with a certain group of people, to eliminate them from your presence, I mean, you know, at the time of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, I mean, we assumed and they had plans to invade the United States. So what are they going to do? They did round up thousands of West Coast Japanese and put them in camps. And it'll happen again if that gets to that point. Of course, we want to keep our country safe, but I want to underscore we rely on partners in majority Muslim countries to help us fight terrorists. Those partners are probably the most worst terrorists. They love those terrorists. Those Muslims lie to these politicians and they believe that shit. We need to build trust in Muslim communities. I don't think so. I don't give a shit whether they have trust or not. Here at home to counter radicalization and one wolf phenomenon, she argued. Well, good luck with that. Ms. Clinton said Mr. Trump's claim on birth of the Orlando shooter, who killed 49 people at a gay nightclub, was factually wrong. Well, she idiotically said, well, no, he's American. He wasn't Afghan. He's Afghan by blood, don't you understand? DNA and genetics. He's by blood, so it don't make any difference where he lives. He ends up being an agent of a foreign race. Okay. And then she says, a ban on Muslims would not have stopped this attack. Well, hell it wouldn't. If you had them all under strict surveillance or moved them out of the country or put them in a concentration camp, it wouldn't have happened. Neither would a wall. Well, walls can work. It worked for the Chinese for a long time until the Mongol hordes figured a way of going around it, and then they took over China and brought the Jews in to help them administer the country. That's part of another story. I don't know how one builds a wall to keep the internet out. That's a stupid statement. So not one of Donald Trump's reckless ideas would have saved a single life in Orlando. Well, how do you know, you bitch? It's just more evidence that he is temperamentally unfit and totally unqualified to be commander-in-chief, she said. Well, you followed some pretty violent presidents in the past. I mean, very violent. Dwight D. Eisenhower was certainly extremely violent, killing massive numbers of Germans, and even worse, causing their deaths after the war by not giving them food and letting them survive by digging holes in the ground. And you got Andrew Jackson. Well, he sure did a number on the engines. This is sort of silly. This is why I don't think we need a federal government anymore. I think we've got to get rid of government and just have state governments. I mean, that's bad enough. But a federal government is a pain in the ass because it's run by idiots. Stupid people. I mean, stupid people who think they're smart. She says, we will stop this lone wolf challenge. Good luck. She said if elected in November, general elections, her top priority would be to identify and stop attacks by lone wolves. Like the one in Orlando over the weekend, resulting in the death of 49 homosexual people. As president, I will make identifying and stopping lone wolves a top priority. Well, good luck with that, you dumbass. We will assemble a team from across the government, private sector, and our communities to get on top of this challenge, Clinton said. Interesting, she uses almost a sexual term here, get on top of it. I guess she caught that from her husband. He got on top of things. And then they got on top of him. Yeah. As president, I will make identifying and stopping lone wolves a top priority. We will assemble a team. Well, yeah, I said that. Ms. Clinton said as president, she would make sure that law enforcement, I like that, law enforcement, you know, it's so tough sounding. And intelligence professionals had all the resources they need. They can't even protect themselves. Are you kidding? Blacks are killing cops all over the country. A lot of people are killing cops. They can't even defend themselves. And they got whole armories full of all kinds of sophisticated weapons. So I think you're going to have a problem there, too. Getting to the point where the guy, you know, a cop stops a guy on the street for a broken taillight. And he's simply, and the guy driving the car pulls a 357 out and blows his brains out. It's gotten to that point. I mean, you know, it's going to get worse. Second, she says, we do need to stop terrorists from getting their hands on the tools to carry out the attacks so easily, especially assault weapons and military-style assault weapons that have no place on the street. So take all the guns away from the people. Good. We want you to do that. Pick up all the guns, Hillary. Great. That's great. Except, I know a hell of a lot of people that are not going to give up their guns no matter what you do. So, go ahead. Disarm the Jews and the blacks and the mestizos. That's fine. Have you gotten a good look at Hillary up close in some of these pictures? How she's aging like mad and she's getting more and more lines in her face. And Obama's getting craggy all over. He's turning, hair's turning white and the whole bit. You know, when you sell your soul to the devil, man, it works on you. Here's another big headline. Lone wolf terrorism remains almost impossible for police to stop. Well, at least they're telling the truth about that. The San Bernardino and Emmanuel AME church mass killings. I wouldn't call 8 or 9 people a mass killing. Share a similarity beyond their senselessness. Neighbors or friends knew something was amiss beforehand but did not alert the authorities. In other words, we don't have enough snitches. We need more snitches. Neighbors of the two San Bernardino killers saw suspicious activity at the Muslim couple's home in the days before the shooting, but feared they'd be accused of racial profiling if they called the police. That's what's funny. All the liberal people all upset, calling people's names and everything, and offending people. Now it's turned around on them. People don't want to say anything because they're afraid of being called a racist. Well, I saw him loading a whole bunch of guns in the back of the car and dynamite and nitroglycerin and everything else, but I ain't saying nothing because I don't want to be called a racist. And Joey Meek, friend of an accused Emmanuel AME shooter, Dylan Roof, pleaded guilty in April to failing to report knowing that Roof planned for months to shoot people at the Charleston Church Bible study. Well, he didn't want to be called a racist. Had the San Bernardino neighbors and Meek come forward with what they had suspected or knew ahead of time, 23 innocent people might be alive today. Unfortunately, police say those San Bernardino neighbors and Meek are examples of what law... Let's see here. Where am I at? Law enforcement needs most to stop lone wolf terrorism, the eyes and ears of the public. Yeah, we need more informants. We've become a snitch culture already. That's a good book. A guy I knew up in Seattle wrote it, Snitch Culture. They keep talking about how bad Nazi Germany was, spying on the public, and Russians, communists. Well, we're getting there. We're getting there just easily. And regrettably, police say little else has come along since the attacks to help law enforcement identify such terrorists before they strike. So you cannot do anything. Your hands are tied. Lone wolves are among the hardest terrorists to identify because they act alone, even if incited by someone else or some other group authorities say. Well... Even when lone wolves are brought to the attention of authorities, they are hard to stop because they generally don't let anyone know what they plan. That seems to be the case with the gunman in Sunday's Orlando, Florida, homosexual nightclub shooting. Federal authorities had questioned him earlier about suspicious comments, but he had done nothing authorities were aware to be give away his deadly plot. Well, you got to remember, this guy was a nutcase anyhow. He didn't know whether he was a queer or not. It looks like he hated himself for coming out of the closet, and then he'd go back in the closet, and then he'd go hang around at the nightclub with all these other homos, and then he got to where he really hated him, and plus he has this Afghan blood flowing through his veins, and all the stuff pro-terrorist stuff coming out of his father and probably his mother and everything. This boy was so totally mixed up, no cops could ever figure him out. State Law Enforcement Division Chief Mark Keel participated in efforts to identify and capture Roof after the Emmanuel AME shooting last June. Now, a year later, the best enforcement tool to help nab lone wolves remains a cooperative public who are becoming less and less cooperative. That's one thing I hand it to the blacks. They're a little bit more holding their mud than the whites. With lone wolves, police have no organized group to monitor, no personal connections to check, and no conspirator to leak information or catch in a mistake, Keel said. Gee whiz. It's amazing. Quote, law enforcement depends on leads and snitches. We depend on public to assist us. They have very many more eyes, but they don't want to talk because you're going to call them white, a stupid goddamn racist, a nativist, you know, right-wingers, white supremacists. So they're going to keep their mouth shut. That's it for today, boys and girls. I've rambled long enough. I hope you get something out of this. I did. 14-5.
But you have no right to call me a murderer. You have a right to kill me. You have a right to do that. But you have no right to judge me. It's impossible for words to describe what is necessary to those who do not know what horror means. Horror. Horror has a face. And you must make a friend of horror. Horror and moral terror are your friends. If they are not, then they are enemies to be feared. They are truly enemies. I remember when I was with Special Forces. Seems thousand centuries ago. We went into a camp to inoculate some children. We left the camp after we had inoculated the children for polio. And this old man came running after us and he was crying. He couldn't say. We went back there, and they had come and hacked off every inoculated arm. There they were in a pile of little arms. And I remember, I cried, I wept like some grandmother. I wanted to tear my teeth out. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I want to remember it. I never want to forget it. I never want to forget. And then I realized, like I was shot with a diamond bullet right through my forehead. And I thought, my God, the genius of that. The genius. The will to do that. Perfect, genuine, complete, crystalline, pure. And then I realized they were stronger than me because they could stand it. These were not monsters. These were men, trained cadres. These men who fought with their hearts, who have families, who have children, who are filled with love, that they have the strength to do that. If I had 10 divisions of those men, then our troubles here would be over very quickly. You have to have men who are moral, and at the same time, we're able to utilize their primordial instincts to kill without feeling, without passion, without judgment, without judgment. Because it's judgment that defeats us.